Hi everyone, welcome back to Birdwatching. This is a podcast about the cultural legacy and impact of the crow. And if all goes according to plan, you are listening to the first of two episodes released today. This episode is a special on-location installment that I recorded a bit ago with my best friend, Corey. We fulfilled all of our goth kid dreams and traveled to New Orleans to hang out, drink Sazeracs, and see the opening date of The Cure's first U.S. tour in several years. New Orleans is a city that seems prime for a crow adaptation, and in my research over the years, I've seen many an internet voice asking how this hasn't happened yet. It's a city where bodies are kept above ground, death is celebrated and revered, ghosts are everywhere, and freaks and weirdos abound. Of course, a crow story would be excellent in New Orleans. We are lucky that one exists, though. It's just not the one that gets nearly enough love. There are a few novels inspired by The Crow, as well as an anthology entitled Broken Lives and Shattered Dreams. We will focus on some of those other novels later, but today we are focusing on one in particular, which is The Lazarus Heart. I will note right here that The Lazarus Heart is credited to author Poppy Z. Bright, who has since changed his name to Billy Martin as he has transitioned. We'll be using his name as intended throughout this episode, but if you go looking for the book, or indeed any of Billy's other excellent works, they will be under Poppy Z. Bright. Many goth folks out there are currently pretty fucking excited that I've mentioned Billy. Billy's seminal vampire book, Lost Souls, was a formative part of many a goth teen's coming of age. More about that in the next episode. As mentioned in our conversation, Billy also famously wrote Exquisite Corpse, which is an absolutely wild book that is certainly not for the faint of heart, and had a strong effect on me. In truth, Lazarus Heart isn't for the faint of heart either. I would like to issue every content warning imaginable for these works, but I absolutely think that they're worth reading and that Lazarus Heart adds new and amazing concepts to this canon, these stories that we talk about here on the show. Here is a quick and dirty plot rundown of Lazarus Heart. If you would like to read this, and I recommend you do, please do so now. I will be giving full spoilers in this rundown. Here we go. Jared Poe is a famed photographer known for his BDSM-inspired work, and in love with a man named Benny. Jared, Benny, and Benny's twin sister Lucrece, who is a trans woman, all live in New Orleans together until tragedy strikes and Benny is brutally murdered, presumably by an entity known as the Bourbon Street Ripper, a serial killer who targets queer folks on the fringes of New Orleans society. The police who arrive on the scene of Benny's murder are quick to pin the crime, and indeed all of the Bourbon Street Ripper's crimes, on the kinky photographer boyfriend. Jared is indeed sent to prison. A sham court case is held where, in particular, the court is cruel to Lucrece because of her gender identity and Benny and Jared's gay relationship. On flimsy evidence and fueled by homophobia, Jared is given the death sentence, but before his day to be executed arrives, he is stabbed to death by an inmate in prison. And of course, the Bourbon Street Ripper continues to kill because it's not Jared. Sometime later, Jared is brought back in a fucking stellar sequence of writing, awakening in a crypt, confused and in a rage. He seeks out Lucrece, accuses her of bringing him back, and then promptly jumps out a window to track down not only his own killers, but the mysterious Bourbon Street Ripper. Jared's work as a crow is increasingly conflicted as he oscillates between personal vengeance and avenging Benny, as well as just avenging the corrupt system that put both of them away. But it all leads to a man who names himself after Rippers, the actual Bourbon Street Ripper. A man, presumably with DID of some sort. As Jared circles his prey, so does Detective Frank Gray, a closeted gay cop who has held lingering doubt and guilt about the Ripper case. A hurricane is moving to strike New Orleans, and the Ripper plans to wash away with the storm, pinning his most recent crimes on Frank before skipping town, and capturing Lucrece as his final victim. Jared rushes to the warehouse where she's being held, but Lucrece has already been killed, and Jared, whose time as the crow to exact vengeance has run out due to his wishy-washy nature, his mortality is restored and the Ripper beats him to a fucking pulp. Lucrece finds herself somewhere in the afterlife and demands an audience with whatever force is behind creating crows. She's taken to a sort of crow court where a giant crow presides over who gets to come back, sort of the great ancestral crow. Lucrece lawyers her way back into being alive and herself comes back to avenge not only Jared, but Benny and the rest of the Ripper's victims. She then mudstomps the Ripper to a pulp as the hurricane hits, and all are avenged. There are so many cool things to cover in this story, great additions to this world and these concepts, and I'm extremely pleased to present to you a conversation with my dearest friend in the world, Corey, and I as we escape the New Orleans afternoon heat a day after seeing The Cure and talk all about Lazarus Heart.
Like Lazarus Heart. Do you like the Lazarus Heart? That's what
I do.
So do I.
Okay.
It's like I say, it's maybe my third favorite.
Okay.
And I can't decide between one or two.
What's one and two for you?
That's controversial.
That's what we're here for.
I actually do have a soft spot for City of Angels. I have a soft spot for City of Angels.
Okay.
But it has to do with the ambitiousness of it, and has to do with the story and the placement of it. It doesn't have much. I think that it's hindered by its execution, not by its story.
I would agree with that.
And I would even say that also works for me here with Lazarus Heart, that I think it can be hindered by its execution, but not by
I mean,
but when you like something like this, you can, you know what about it you feel like is, can be worked on. But I like Lazarus Heart because of having read it at different times in my life. I like it because I enjoy that it fleshes out some things.
Yeah.
Like,
the passage that we always come back to is the beginning. It's the...
Yes.
Because nobody else gets into, like... So you've embalmed a body.
So you've embalmed a body.
So now we start out here. We have embalmed a body, and now it is being...
Like, I don't want to be gross, but this thing is very
visceral. This thing's fucking gross. No, it's okay.
It's
like,
very visceral, and it's very, like... It addresses the reality of things like resurrection, but it does it not just with the body, not with the function of how that would happen, but it deals with it emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody, not, so like, okay, for instance, like in the film, for instance, the first film, there's a kind of, I would say it's, like, sort of laissez-faire, kind of like, oh, yeah, kind of a, like, Sarah for sure is like, Eric, is that you? Like that's about as really far as the effect.
They do kind of just, though, just like, that's pretty fucked up, can't have shit in Detroit.
But that's like, true, right?
Yeah.
But they also, what happens is they kind of take this and they have to give it to an audience shorthand of resurrection.
Right.
But in writing, you can just... give.
And it can be 10 pages,
And people have to come to it in their own time. So Lazarus Heart has the benefit of holding as much of your attention as you're willing to give it, because it's writing. And because if you want to, you get rewarded with texture and visuals and, God help me, for scent and smell and taste.
It's a visceral book.
Because... the first passages of speaking from the point of the narration from the point of view of the crow itself coming, and the sort of internal thoughts of the sort of somewhat animal logic of the crow arriving and then, you know, pecking on the mausoleum, etc., and then that moving immediately into our resurrected crow. You know,
who's like sitting in the mausoleum like, what the fuck, for like a hot minute,
becomes aware of and is embalming fluid flowing out, but feeling the strength that is given,
right?
And certainly later on, when, you know, later on when we have, you know, spoilers, whatever,
we're good. This is in depth. Listen, if you're here, you've read it.
But when we get a second crow in this story, once again, they are imbued with the strength, not just, like, invulnerability, because it's not absolute.
Right, of course.
And they deal with this a lot in Lazarus Heart, because the crow makes what I would call, just from my point of view, I would say is making a mistake. But it's a mistake based out of, like, a sense of that same justice.
Right. He goes a little off track.
Yeah. And that ends up hurting it.
Yeah.
Which means that there's kind of a cult logic to
the crow. There's rules.
And not only are there rules, but when when we get a second crow, which is what I like. I like about this.
I like the idea. They kind of do, here's where all the crows are. There's Big Daddy Crow.
Yes.
And you have to lawyer your way into speaking with them.
I love it.
I kind of love that because we have a few depictions of, like, this is where you go when you're done, or this is, like, where you're hanging out. And it's, like, the Golden Fields. It's Elysium, basically.
Yeah.
And a couple people have done that, and I think most people kind of center the, like, I don't know, the, like, leader of this area of life is the Skull Cowboy. That's usually what approach they go with it. I like the idea of it being, like, the crow.
Well, I think that being, like, the reward for me when I've been reading it again, the, like, excitement of getting to this point where there is a second crow at that moment, because it's a sense of justice for another crow.
It's another, like, it's
like there's
the,
like,
whole situation is so fucked.
You will, like, and there's almost a demand. It's not, it is lawyering, but there is a cold logic to it.
Yeah.
And demanding that you will send me back.
Yeah.
And that there are rules that are created and kind of fleshed out that make it something that don't turn to, like, I know having listened that wow. you've touched on Stairway.
Yeah, we just finished Stairway coverage.
Oh, did you?
Yeah,
did you?
We did.
I know I listened.
I know.
but Stairway doesn't really flesh out. It doesn't give more. It just says what is, and we're just going to kind of make it a thing. That's kind
this
of,
is a cop procedural.
It's a cop procedural. Yeah. It's like a buddy cop procedural sometimes also.
Sometimes. Also, there's a crow here.
Because this also deals with queer community, queer theory, queer mm-hmm. culture, it's a very, like, in our world, there tends to be sometimes a coddling of the concept of queer.
Sure.
And people don't, like, they're not aware that there are so many different types of people, therefore there are so many types of queer people. And they're, the taste of this story to me is the viscera of being a human that changes from one state to another, be it from death to life, be transitioning from
right.
masculine to feminine, and even in the form of our, I guess I'll say antagonist, the man named after Rivers, as
yeah.
it were. Like,
yeah,
because
which is
all of these, this transition from just a person who then gets struck by lightning and now has become something else entirely. When it's not Benny, no. When Lucrece, I don't know why I'm saying Benny.
But the twins.
Because, yes, true. But when Lucrece reaches into our antagonist's mind during the, like, final sort of
climax, yeah, during that thing, yeah. During when
during that,
it's looking pretty dire.
And it's pushed back and there's something there. It's like there is another world of these animalisms where they interact, because it's described like a serpent,
right?
Electrical.
There's a couple others that have tried to do that. I know, like
City of Angels has a.
City of Angels,
was it City of Angels?
City of Angels kind of does that.
That's like a serpent.
Lethe.
Okay. Yeah.
Tim Seeley's Lethe series, which again, Rivers.
Of course.
I was like, huh. And that one also, Tim Seeley was the only other person who's written a gay or, like, queer-friendly crow.
Yeah.
They invent a sort of antagonist that's, like, a vulture.
Oh, okay.
I'll get into it when I get into it. But, like, there is, that's been played with, Stairway does, I think, a snake.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Having watched Stairway, like,
McGee is doing that.
Yes.
So
it's this that lays.
I don't know.
There's a sort of a layout of there is some fleshing out even more of these spirit worlds.
Mm-hmm.
There are other crow stories that have done bits about this, not just like visual. There's like in some of the comics, in
yeah.
some of the other writing, there's little bits, but being able to give an author and say, "Go ahead and do what you're gonna do."
I did want to touch on that because I think it's fucking bonkers that
yeah.
it's 1996 when this book comes out.
Yeah.
And Billy on his website was describing, like, I thought for sure they weren't going to let me, like, do what I wanted. It's such a fucking insane idea for this, you know, heretofore extremely straight.
Yes.
And Billy mentioned that they kind of bounced off the book but loved the movie.
Sure.
And I can kind of see where that would clash with him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a certain, like, I don't know what the right word for it is, but I can just see how that wouldn't, like, be their thing.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And I've read a lot of Doc Bright's stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I've read a lot of Billy's writing.
Yeah. I've only read Lost Souls and Poets of Exquisite Corpse. Exquisite Corpse made me physically ill.
Well, I mean, this also has the ability to do that.
Yeah,
it will
for real.
Churn, and it is... Mm-hmm. It is visceral.
And I do mean that as a compliment. I'm not being like, oh my God, this wretched book. I'm like, wow, that's sick as fuck. I love it. But like, I need to take a break here. Yeah.
But it does not, it starts without pulling a punch because this is a, when it's not, it doesn't, it's not some sort of like ethereal magic and like light moves.
Oh, there's
around.
Nothing ethereal it's about just this. It's fucking.
The vomiting of, you know, formaldehyde, embalming fluid, just pain, these parts of the body that have not functioned being forced to do so again.
Yeah.
Breaking of rigor mortis, actually becoming resurrected instead of, like, you will, there is pain that is felt in doing this.
Yeah.
Becoming a crow is not necessarily something that's great.
Yeah, like, it's not like...
You're not supposed to be.
Doesn't feel cool, maybe.
In a perfect world, there are none of them.
Right, of course.
No one has to come back from being hurt. But the story also deals, like, in other parts, like, we have our... I have placed as a secondary character in my mind, even though really not, Detective Frank Gray.
Right.
And Frank is not a good person.
Mm-mm.
And there is this part of making someone real who is closeted, who hides themselves. And there are lots of these, like, facades and hidden things about people. And then
The mask work in this book is great.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because literally, our crow wears an actual mask.
Like Mardi Gras mask, yeah.
Yeah, like this, like, Venetian white mask type.
I think that's the only one that's done that. Trying to think, like, that I can think of.
But these,
yeah,
these,
like, for real, yeah.
Hiding behind things while what is our heroes are trying to live as their true selves.
Mm-hmm.
But the world who are looking at transhumans and saying, no, you're not, you're putting on a guise. And
yeah.
Like, no, I'm stripping away what is not.
That fucking courtroom scene is like one of the most infuriating yeah. things I've ever read. Like, I get heated about it.
I'm not a big fan of any of the, like...
Yeah.
You can't be a fan of any law enforcement in this.
Oh, no.
Which, even though we do love, like...
We love Albrecht, but that's about it.
We do love Albrecht in the films. We love
yeah.
Albrecht.
We love Ernie Hudson. We're there for
exactly.
that. But, like, literally the only good cop.
The only.
And he keeps getting demoted. We touched on this a little bit when we were just, like, talking about stuff we wanted to talk about. I bounced really hard off of almost everyone in this book, except for Lucrece when I started it. Because I really did. I wasn't attached to anyone. I was like, I thought Jared was so fucking, like, rough. But also, like...
Stays
rough the whole time. I get it, though. Like, I had to, like, be like... Because I'm like, you know... Eric Draven is my comfort character. You know, I'm like, ah, yes, this is a very comforting presence to me. But, like, it doesn't have to be that way for all of them.
But Eric is, like, very much... Eric is a crow that operates off of love.
Yes.
Okay. Like, not all crows necessarily operate off of love.
Mm-hmm.
Some crows operate off of justice. Some of them, to some degree, whatever causes the vengeance to be sought, it is
yeah.
that.
There's an equation. There's balance to all of it. It all has to add up to the same thing, but this one is like 70% rage, 30% everything
else. Yeah.
Eric is like 80% obsessed with Shelley, like, love, you know, like
80%, maybe like 100%.
There's 20% of insanity going on there.
There, like, is, because
the thing is, Eric's lost it,
and
in the book, more so.
I don't see a lot of that in Jared.
I see just full, like, but also, I think it comes from maybe a lifetime of shitty situations.
Jared rushes in back into being known to be alive, screaming at someone else about, why did you do this?
Yeah.
You should have left me dead, is the thing.
Yeah.
It's like, this is not someone who is accepting or understanding necessarily of what they're doing.
This is someone who had a hard time,
like,
died horribly.
Exactly. horribly at the end of a sharp spoon.
Of a sharp spoon in a fucking prison yard for, like already on death row, you know? Like,
at the core of a lot of this, though, is homophobia, mm-hmm. transphobia.
Of course.
And for an artist, I say that because, well, Doc is great. But for Billy to, and I've mentioned it to you before in private conversation, this is an author who themselves are going through their own journey of transitioning.
Right.
away.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that does have to do with your viscera changing.
Yeah.
So touching on that with the story is a big deal, but mm-hmm. also dealing with transphobia, homophobia in here, and different forms of this, especially internalized things like self, like when you are unwilling to accept and it's something that you do not like about yourself, but you deserve to express and understand and be safe, but the things around you keep you close. Much like our detective hero-ish. Names of everybody in the stories I love. Names of the characters are very important.
Yeah.
But this is weird because when I wrote my notes, and I do have notes I'd love to share.
Let's get into it. Yeah, of course.
But a lot of it has to do with, like, very early on, because I was very into wanting to reread the words that were so, like, I keep putting my hands in front of my mouth.
Yeah, we're really making a meal out of this.
Because I am very, like, I can taste the change. Like, I like want to feel that change. I want to understand that change of resurrection. Because for each character, either in a death or in an action that they choose to take, is itself also a kind of resurrection into a different life, a different way of living. Even in Frank's partner who passes, now is like some sort of, I don't want to say icon, but is representative to Frank
yeah.
of something. Did we need to, like, early on kill the, like, you know, queer woman of color? I don't think
so. Yeah, a bit rough, but like.
And I know that sometimes, I'm reading this again recently, I understand, well, sometimes, you know, Billy's, like, distance is a bit from some of the stuff written previously, but mm-hmm. I don't think it's necessary. With a wide view, just because you represent these things in your stories doesn't necessarily mean that you ascribe to them or you want to see them happen.
Right, of course.
And I also am sure that to some degree, just having our, and again, I say enemy in this, in my own notes, I say enemy about our antagonist.
Yeah.
Of the Bourbon Street Ripper, as it was, right? The
yeah,
Bourbon
that's
Street
it. Yeah.
Ripper. To, like, they're an enemy because they themselves don't know that they have upon, and we don't know.
We don't
when,
know.
When
like,
the mind of our antagonist is reached into,
mm-hmm.
and there is something that is essentially otherworldly in their brain, of this snake, like serpent electricity
yeah.
is touched when, there's no, like, there's not really a full person there anymore.
Yeah.
And this is a character who themselves spends the entire thing treating other people and making violent action towards others and justifying it by them not being full people. Alien invasion nonsense. This sort of, like,
the them being capitalized really hits really, really hard.
Yeah.
For that them.
Yes.
And it's doesn't even mean the same thing every time it's
written
out.
Yeah.
it's, I feel like, yeah. It and also, like, with
name changes.
Yeah, with the name changes. Yeah, exactly.
It like, there's such a different thing.
It's, you know, I hate it when people are like, it's DID, but, like, it's kind of DID.
And that's the thing, that's the thing that I want to be, like, touching on is that a person gets struck by lightning and it triggers a mental illness in some way. I don't think I've ever read of anything like that. And there may be
things. I don't
think
so.
But that person, like, making that a person has some degree of mental illness, the drive for why they are either bad or whatever.
The way they are, even.
Yes.
Yeah.
But there's homophobia here.
100%.
There is transphobia here. That is what that is. And who's to say that wasn't in that mind beforehand, but it developed over time.
It got weirder with the thing.
Can we even say whether or not the account that is recalled
is true?
Struck is true.
Exactly.
However, later on, when Lucrece comes back and then touches the mind, knows what has happened in that mind, mm-hmm. knows what has occurred.
Yeah.
If they had been alleviated of this suffering early on, of this static in their mind, if whatever river you want to use as a name.
Sure,
right?
Yeah.
If whatever river you want to use as a name for our enemy here, our antagonist, if they had been alleviated this early on, would they still have the same biases?
Yeah.
But would they be as violent or as negative or derogatory or destructive? They do seem to think, like most serial killers, they are smarter than other people. They want to lead people along. And literally
some vanity
this.
About it, yeah.
Our crow is not a terribly effective one.
He's kind of bad at the job.
Bad at the job.
Yeah.
But not fully bad at the job, just makes mistakes. And it's part of the reason why I enjoy this one and why it's so high up on my list.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a crow that makes mistakes. There's a crow that just has to out of care for someone.
Mm-hmm.
Out of care for Benny, who's passed. And
yeah.
out of a sense of avenging themselves also. And when Lucrece,
that's kind of the dual thing about it. I think that's why I find, like, the middle of the book sort of difficult, because it's not, it's one of the only instances I can think of where they weren't killed by, like, the same person.
Yeah.
They're killed by two, they're killed by an idea.
Yes.
And
but what's the idea coming from?
Right.
Right. And that idea is our enemy. Is a representation of queer phobia in any way whatsoever.
Exactly.
I don't like the idea of it being a justification of mental illness that does that.
Yeah.
But I understand why it's there, to add a, this also might not be this person's fault. They are imbued with something that's causing
yeah.
it. And making
kind of
it
doing a zoom out, doing a greater societal ills versus
yes.
a, you know.
So I like it because it deals with tons of strata, and people maybe don't want to read that. People,
it's a lot for a licensed novelization
so
crow
much.
Story.
It could be standalone. It's like what? Like 300 pages this
yeah.
thing. But it goes.
It
and
goes.
It goes hard
yeah.
on telling you, look at this. You know me. And you know that one of my favorite novels is Crash.
Yes.
And it's another book that puts a person's face into the viscera of what is not good,
mm-hmm.
that or what should not be good. These sort of like strange paraphilias of the 21st and 20th century that is like, we need to be careful with how we play with our minds type thing.
Mm-hmm.
But Billy grabs your head by the back of the nape and says, look in the gutter, look at what's being done. It's visceral. It is being done to a human. Because
yeah.
all of the things that are described of blood and bone. And
super, yeah.
People are being torn apart. And when Lucrece is reassembled and the intestines move back
yeah.
into her body and the blood moves back in.
And she's like, yeah. Ooh,
all of this
so
is human.
Yeah,
and
very
it's
much.
Because The Crow is a human story. It's not a, necessarily anything beyond.
It's not a ghost story.
It can
like,
be, but it's not. It's a human story.
Some of them
about
lean.
Emotion.
It's always fun to see what an author taking this thing chooses to go more ghost about it or chooses to go more
right.
a body back about it.
Like, I think it can be
anything. It can be both, yeah.
And that's one of the great things about the crow that we love, is mm-hmm. that, like, it can be so many different things.
Right.
But it always comes from a core.
Because I always think about, there's two other crows that have, like, body stuff.
Yeah.
And it's Iris, who is literally getting stitched back up together. And also, I think Iris being pregnant when killed, like, you, like, your body's different, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, there's, like, a certain, like, awareness or whatever. I don't know. I've never been pregnant. like,
neither have I.
Crazy. There's like a certain like body thing going on with Iris as well. And the other one is actually the Memento Mori one.
Right.
That crow is torn in half.
Absolutely.
And he's got like the duct tape around the middle, not unlike Eric.
Sure.
Towards the end, but it's to put himself back together.
Absolutely.
And I like that because it's a Catholic story, and this is my body. I have broken it for you.
Oh,
take
excellent.
And eat. Yeah, pretty good
okay.
stuff. We're going to get there when we get there. But
I'm looking
but like,
to
whereas
hearing.
You can do, like, when I think of the ghost ones, like the ones where it's a very, not a physical, mm-hmm. I think of Kirar, the little girl, because she's just a ghost. Could totally just be a little ghost.
I was always worried that that was struck. That was put up to the idea of not wanting to represent anything that was violent to the body of a child.
Oh, 100%. They deal with it very sensitively.
It becomes more effective as it is a child, as a ghost for me, because
I like to think nothing is going to hurt that child.
And but also that thoughts can linger for so long from childhood and can carry forward, and those memories and reveries are like that intangible.
Well, and that case is super cold when she reappears in that story.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like that this all happens within a time period.
Mm-hmm.
I like that rage of Jared, that rage that exists, also comes to Lucrece too. And I have a feeling that Lucrece actually has quite a bit more fucking rage, but is way more direct and way more... Mm-hmm. If I had to say which one of these is the quote-unquote better crow of the two, I'm like...
It's Lucrece.
This one, like, goes down because this one chooses. This one demands
it.
And turns away from, like, whatever acceptance of death. In
maybe even an easier afterlife.
Possibly.
Like, you know, she could be going to Elysian Fields.
She could be going straight to her brother.
Yeah, she could be... Yeah, exactly.
They could be together.
But she's got to fix it.
And if that takes going back and doing what's right. But even at that moment,
an unimaginable pain.
Receiving all of the pain, being shot again.
Again.
At some point, talking too much. And Jared's like, enough, just do
this. Just do it, yeah.
And then they mud stomp the enemy into nothingness.
Nothingness.
Seeing, like... Jordan at that time.
Yes.
The antagonist. Seeing mm-hmm. the Jordan, the killer's response of like, what? Is sort of a huge trope, right? But you're supposed to be dead. I can't stop you. It happens. But that happens in a lot of the crow.
Right.
But that shock is what you want. And having it happen to them twice.
It's pretty nice.
Is great. Especially since they feel, it seems like the killer feels so powerful.
Yeah.
So powerful because they just took out
They just took out the crow. They just took out the crow.
Another murder. You've literally brought them to the
They pin it on. They've delivered the letter to Pin.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're pinning it on. So the use of like the Poe for it is kind of great too.
I do. Because I'm like, okay, it's the Raven.
But also. I'm still trying to deal with and trying to understand the epilogue. And I've read every time. The clever idea of having this crow anomaly in the hurricane. The hurricane is... Okay. The hurricane, as a part of the climax, is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And that there is this spirit or ethereal representation of that eye of the storm as both Lucrece and Jared finally move across to be with Benny after things are taken care of. That's so beautiful. But the story does go in that middle. And we've talked about this off of, you know, and I've tried to save it for the air, as I said.
Yeah, we were given notes. We were like, what's an outline?
In fact, I'll get my notes up.
If you wish,
here.
Yeah.
But The middle is sort of a calm before the storm. There is this brewing and rumbling to what is happening. Pieces are falling into place that will either make the very ending of this go well or go poorly. Because until the very last moments of the story, I am not. Every time I read it, though, I know where it's going to go, but the feelings that it gives me is, I don't know if this is going to work this time.
Yeah.
And Jared fails to some degree. Yeah. Like, Jared fails.
Well, that's the other Memento Mori connection is the original protagonist of that one also fails. And the,
right.
the girl who is also, maybe even has more reason to be mad, gets to finish the job. Which is, we literally were in a record store like a couple days ago talking. And, you know, I think a lot of people have floated the, well, why didn't, if we're talking original, why didn't Shelley get to come back?
I mean... I would love to see a flip.
And we're like, okay, where do we get Shelley in a wedding dress and a big fucking coat? But mud stomping, you know?
You also know that I love Hannah Foster, the greatest girl.
Hannah Foster, the greatest girl. Oh, yes.
I am a huge Hannah Foster stan because I love, first off, I'm a child of a single mother, and I love a mother that is a crow.
Yes.
I love a mother's
girl. It's good.
Any other one is. I do.
Yeah.
The other is...
Iris, almost.
She... In Stairway, she has rage. She has anger.
She's so fucking mad.
But she also represents like a female rage that cannot necessarily be accessed by, that cannot be accessed by unless you are transitioning hormonally and experiencing that type of rage or the justifications mm-hmm. of that rage in society. Eric's not going to experience that.
No.
Okay? Eric's not experiencing that, but Hannah is like, are you kidding me? Like, it seems to be flabbergasted at Eric's, like, almost theatrics
yeah.
or, like, sadness to it. And it's like, what are you doing? And she gets angry. She gets so angry.
She
and
does.
He goes, he gets a little wild. He's a little bonkers.
Yeah.
But also.
We're talking Eric Draven in Stairway to Heaven, not
yes,
like the
course,
other Eric's.
Stairway.
Yeah.
Not, yeah, no. But that's why I like her as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because of this exact same, like, there is a rage that is understood. And I would...
I like her because all of that. But also, like, for me, like, I get frustrated, and I mentioned this in the Stairway episode, I get frustrated when the time constraint on the crow isn't there. Like, I get frustrated when... The worst part about Stairway to Heaven for me, the part that is the most frustrating narratively, is like, aren't you done? Like, there's no, like, they never close the loop because it's a TV show and they want it to be a cop procedural.
Why does Eric have to pay rent?
Why? I do not need to see Eric Draven, the crow, talk to a landlord about having to live in his building again.
It's so weird.
It's, and I like...
Don't have to eat. Don't have to sleep.
You don't have to do anything.
I'm
you could
dying.
Just, like, and it frustrates me. And Hannah Foster coming in and be like, what the fuck are you doing? You are bad at this.
It's almost like, we started off with Lazarus Heart. Now we're talking about Stairway. Is this how it goes?
It all comes back to Stairway. There's just too much of it. I'm never
We've
leaving it behind.
A lot of it, though.
We have, yeah.
Different crows come from different places.
Yeah.
Because there are so many different forms of betrayal. There's so many forms of unfinished business and loss.
And there's so many forms of love that those can
there's
center
so many
on. There's
forms
so many relationships that could be that.
There's so many forms of care. But there's also so many different forms of justice.
Yeah.
And vengeance. And you can, as a writer, mix through all of those. But I think that Billy puts so many different forms into this and stacks them so well.
That is what I liked about it.
It's
there's a lot of relationships to get in on there.
If without all three, Benny,
Lucrece, and
Jared. Lucrece,
yeah,
all three of them together are like a single unit of something, and
mm-hmm.
that's stated throughout the story, and
yeah.
how their closeness goes
that's
goes beyond text, you know, societal norm of what being close is to
mm-hmm.
a degree. There is some stuff, but Southern Gothic has dealt with those subjects.
Yeah.
Even Edgar Allan Poe has dealt with stuff.
Oh, 100%.
We have watched as Crimson Peak has dealt with these subjects, but this. By the end, these people are completely unburdened by these trappings and these things like this. I'm a little bit worried about what happens to Detective Gray. I don't know. Not a great person. First introduction is pretty much not great. Not a solid person.
Not very good, yeah, yeah.
But it's because I guess for me, my experience with queer culture is through my family, through my existence. And it's saying, like, they're people are just people. There is no greater or lesser based on who they are. They can be good, they can be bad, regardless of where they are on any spectrum. And Billy shows people being people.
Yeah,
and
100%.
On top of that, the Crow exists in this world.
Yeah.
The Calm of the Storm is, for me, the lining up of parts and the movement forward to arriving at a climax. The middle is not as interesting to me as
yeah.
the beginning.
I get frustrated because I don't know which killer trail we're tracking. Are we doing it? Is this a person who wronged Jared, or is this a person who wronged Benny, or is it a person who wronged both of them? I get really frustrated with that because I was like,
well, the reason why yeah. it frustrates me is because it seems like,
does Jared not deserve to get justice too? But also, sure. Does Benny not deserve, like, are there priorities here?
But that's what you're supposed to think yes. of. Mm-hmm. That's the question of it, is like the different levels of who deserves. It's not just deserves, but will these people receive what they, the justice, the vengeance?
Will they get what's coming to them?
Or will those people get what is coming to them? Like yeah. I said, that middle part still makes me constantly question, even no matter how many times I've read it.
Yeah.
I still am like, but will it? Is it supposed to go well? And Jared fails some. And is saved
yeah.
by love and care. And somebody who's willing to literally cut the cords of what might be
eternal rest.
Released,
yeah.
rest. And instead comes back and is like, we gotta take care of this. And okay, so my notes mostly, because I love the way things are described, the change. Mm-hmm. But there were some like little bits.
Yeah.
Bits of text that always stood out to me. So one of them is this idea of escape clauses built in to the fabric of the universe. It's so interesting.
That one's good, yeah.
The concept of or the like part of writing where the Crow is described as she and the Revenant part raised he. Doc has transitioned, and now, like, there's so much of moving from one state to another that this moment from the Crow waking up and imbuing Jared with this power is a transition from two states, almost like it is carrying it on its wings and giving it to him.
Yeah.
Not just waking up and being a messenger and a guide, but is like carrying it inside and places it inside of him. Let's see. It was so wild to read from the point of view of a Crow still in a coffin and just being in there and being inside.
It's a lot. Well, it's like it's the same thing where like Billy writes these openings to these books. Like I said, I made it about I don't know 8 pages into Exquisite Corpse, or even like we both have read Lost Souls.
Sure,
and the opening of that is also extremely visceral, like movie level,
it's
like holy
trigger
shit.
And
it's trigger warning central. Let's be clear.
A lot of Billy's writing is like huge trigger warnings.
Yeah,
neon
this is
flickering lights.
We were debating the term splatterpunk for Billy.
We were, yeah.
And I would say yes.
I would say yes through the but through my eyes of splatterpunk, through like a 90s eye of splatterpunk. But there's a it's like saying sentimental splatterpunk. It's not, I don't describe what I'm reading. I wouldn't describe what I'm reading in The Change, the viscera, all this as gore.
It's in other places, but it's not that.
It's intense, acute awareness of what is happening about being a person.
It is body horror.
What that is. And that's what
I was body horror say. Doesn't necessarily have to be gore.
Yeah.
They can go together, but it's not like
it's,
a thing.
It's almost, like I say, like a sentimentality to the flesh, to what is changed about it. Having the awareness of how a body changes and how bringing it back. I mean, Mary Shelley's great, but this was some serious
That's
stuff.
That's some serious
like,
shit.
Like,
yeah.
I'm not, you know, I'm not hearing this in Mary Shelley.
Yeah.
Okay, so the some of the other stuff were just little bits of writing that stood out to me. The description of flash powder revelations.
Yeah.
This is like poetry to me, popping up.
Billy's an amazing writer. Like, no matter what you, no matter if you think it's gross or not, you can't deny. It's really good writing. Way more effort than most people put into, I don't know, a licensed Crow novelization.
For sure. Like, it's, that's mind-boggling, isn't it?
I think that they were like, hey, can you just, like, we have a thing, we want to do more stuff with it.
And they got more than they may have been bargained for, and what a
great
thing.
He fully expected them to be like, fuck all the way off with this.
Yes, exactly, like he'd said
earlier. And they're like, no, do it. And I love that. I actually think that is very integral to Crow stuff.
Sure.
Is taking things that are like, we don't need to do that. Like, what? That's real wacky. Like,
Stairway. There you go.
Sure, of course. no. Like, finding subculture authenticity in a way that I don't think any other thing with as much reach and popularity as The Crow has actually, like, dug into. Like, the subculture it has,
yes,
like, become a part of.
Sure.
Like, when we look at, I was just reading through Shattered Lives and Broken Dreams, which is, like, the poetry and short story collection. And that one is also, like, all over the place. Like, there's a lot of different things going on there. Henry Rollins wrote a weird poem. Iggy Pop wrote a weird poem. Sure. Like, they're like, we know that these people and these genres, these, like, touchstones of this thing are super important to this thing in a way that like a lot of other sort of like properties, I guess, is
because
the right word.
I think it's because those things deal with an emotional intelligence.
Yes.
An emotional like rawness, or being able to translate an emotional rawness into understanding, or at least a concept that will give its viewer, reader, listener a response of a concept that they derive. Like any art, most of the time when you view it, it's what it reflects in you that's important.
Yeah.
But in this, they are handing an author and saying, tell us what's important to you if you could do this.
And then full-heartedly putting that out to everyone.
Yes.
And I think that's amazing.
That's what I love about
it.
I
love
it. What I love specifically about
like,
Lazarus.
When I think about novelizations, I think of like the Buffy ones. I think of like, you know, whatever. Sure. And it's like, this goes fucking hard, though.
It goes extremely there.
Yeah.
Okay, some of the other bits were, I did make a note, and I know I've talked a lot about Link, but the sensory overload of transferring to death from life.
Mm-hmm.
There is a tech, there's like a small...
And it's not only in Jared coming back or even Lucrece coming back, it is the river man.
Of course.
With the victims. Of course. There is such a horrible, like... You can't escape the feelings in your body when you're reading that. You're like...
Well, it seems... I start to trust throughout the story. I start to trust the more difficult, the more raw resurrection, because the killer uses drugs, uses pharmacology to put his victims into a kind of sleep and bring them back out.
Right.
And that is easy. And again, there is, much like in Lost Souls, there is the words of the concepts of death being easy in there.
Yes.
It's an echo from
death
there.
Death is easy, living is harder.
And it's super is not easy in this. It's coming back to life that is the hard part.
Yeah.
Death is like, it's going to be difficult. But the coming back to life is hard.
Is he...
There are some words that I said that I like. This is just this little bit of text. The hopeless litany of disbelieved gods sounds so...
I highlighted that too.
I could read that
That's
sentence
so nice.
A few times.
Yes. I had that one circled too.
I like the idea of there's some other text that I wanted to share. So like when our killer says, showing a little of yourself to the enemy in exchange for their fear, by like showing some truths about yourself is going to get some of the fear out of them. That kind of shows this is not some sort of mission. This is something where you're hurting people.
This is about pain, not it is justice.
The story touches a couple of times on themes of Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah, it does.
Isolde's painting. Let's see. Descriptions of people's countenances. Like, literally, their faces as being disturbingly perfect. Let's see. God, these are all, like, little bits. Vertigo sucking at his bare feet. The feeling of a floor dropping below you felt so interesting. Mm-hmm. I can feel this book when I read it. And that is why I love it more than most.
I think that's where it really connects to the comic, to James's stuff. Because I know Billy said, not their thing. Totally understandable. There's a visceral body element to both. It's different. Because it's between mediums, it's between, you know, things like that. That's a real in your body book too. It's just in a different way.
Yes, because you're feeling emotion in your body.
I don't. There's a lot of physical stuff for
Eric.
There
is for Eric. Like absolutely an expression of himself. We'd love to see Eric dance.
We love an Eric dance.
That was robbed from me in the film. But
I wish. Yeah.
But we'd love to see Eric dance. What can I say?
Hey, if you're listening to this and you're working on the new one, can we make sure that gets in reshoots? Thank you.
God,
I'll see you then.
This thing makes the crow seem real. Like, the crow has always seemed to me like a fairy.
No, I literally was going to say adult fairy tales is like one of my favorite genre of thing where we create these things that have magical elements, but they are essentially fairy tales for adults. This is not that.
That's because literally the very last words of the epilogue are sometimes fairy tales come true. And this is just, it made real, or like it's made flesh.
Yes. And not, yeah, 100%.
Thanks for talking to me about this.
Yeah. Thank you so much to Corey for guest starring on this episode. Corey will return in the next one. And thank you to you for listening. This was a whole deep dive into a story that doesn't get nearly enough love for how much it contributes to its world. And I was so pleased to talk about it on location in New Orleans. We did see The Cure on this trip. They did play Burn. It was all very magical. And it was extremely magical to be on location for this story. And honestly, I know I said that, like, we have a crow story in New Orleans at the beginning of the episode. We need more. We should get more of those. It's ripe for it. Our next episode is going to be a pivot in a slightly different direction. But after that, our next piece of coverage should be the third Crow film, The Crow Salvation. We will also be getting more into, as mentioned in this episode, Broken Lives and Shattered Dreams, and the other licensed Crow novelizations as they make their way into my collection from eBay. So stay tuned for more. Thank you once again for listening, and we'll see you next time.